Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
And now I'm really aggravated. Greeny rolling on, presented by Progressive Insurance, the great Doris Burke on the Goodyear Hotline in this hour. You know, I made a promise to myself I would never read the comments. Don't read the comments on Twitter. It's a bad idea. But I just pointed out this Twitter post that upset me yesterday, and now I just looked at the comments, and I'm 1,000 times more upset. You have any idea how tough a week I'm already having? My son, my baby, my youngest, is graduating from high school on Thursday. It is a weepy, very dramatic week in my life. I am prone to getting very upset easily. I could be moved literally to tears at practically any moment. And then for those of you just joining me, Stace posts a picture of me yesterday on Twitter standing next to Dan Orlovsky in which I literally look like I'm his infant son. I don't know what angle this picture was taken at, but for some reason I look so short next to him. It's insane. And I'm not that short. Now, he is, first of all, very tall. Dan is very tall. And I am a tall man. And I look minute in this picture. Again, it's on Twitter. It's at StaceyGSG. So I made the enormous mistake after we just talked about it of checking the comments.
Ooh.
Here's a comment. Again, just in response to this picture, Kyle writes, "Look at little Sparky." Mark writes, "I never realized the height difference." Ramiro writes, "Father and son bonding." DS writes, "Is Dan that much taller?" NYDragon69 writes, "Greeny, you are the shortest 5'11 and 3/4 person I ever saw. LOL. JTLA Tiger writes, "Mike looks like Dan's little brother." Ramiro writes, "He does look like your dad. Confirmed." Justin writes, "Dan makes Mike look like a frail old man." What the hell is going on here? Why is this happening to me? So I and this is like self-inflicted. This wasn't something that was like printed, like, you know, celebrities will have like, you know, unflattering pictures posted of themselves like on websites and they get upset and they sue.
You pose for this.
My wife posted this picture. My wife put this picture on Twitter and I'm just being mocked. And it just has me in a bad mood. So there's that. Plus, the NBA playoffs stink because the Nets are just killing everybody. They beat Milwaukee last night by 39 points in a game that wasn't nearly that close. They just didn't even pay attention to the regular season. James Harden has played, 43 seconds in this series? And they are just rampaging through this. Listen to how one-sided this is. Kendrick Perkins picked the Bucks to win the series on this radio show. We had him on a week ago or whenever it was. And I said, "Big Perk, who's going to win that series?" He said the Bucks are going to win the series. So I've got him on TV this morning on Get Up. And I say to him, "Big Perk, your team is down 2-0. If you're a leader on that Bucks team, what are you saying? What's your motivational speech to the guys?" Here's what he said.
"I've never been in this position where I've been down 0-2 in 2 blowout games. So I don't know what to tell myself. It's been fun."
It's been fun. He began by saying, "It's been fun, fellas." That's it. He said, "It's been fun." That's his motivational speech. He's given up. If he's the leader on that team, he's given up.
You play a lot of golf, Greeny. What mulligan should the Nets afford the Bucks? Where should we start? 10-0? 15-0?
No, they should load manage. They should load. That's what they're good at. They should load manage the series. There's no way Kyrie should play game 4. Why would he? I'm not sure he should play game 3. Harden won't play again. Harden probably won't play again the whole playoffs. Harden will just sit there resting his hamstring, drinking a big gulp on the sideline. That I don't know. What was he drinking last night? I want someone to get to the bottom of that. I see a picture of James Harden drinking from a straw that literally looks. I mean, obviously it was something. But you know what I'm talking about, right? When you go into like, I don't know if it's at a 7-Eleven. I don't drink that stuff. But whatever those huge tub of a drink you can get is that has all the ice in it and it's like slushy.
Oh,
is
the
it a
icy.
Slushy?
The icy.
An icy?
That's good. That's
is that what
good.
That is?
Do you ever have those?
No.
Like the blue raspberry, they have the strawberry.
Have I had a blue raspberry icy? Who are you talking to?
Fair enough.
So no, of course not. But my point is, that's what it looks like, right? I've always seen them. People seem to have those and they've got these huge straws. Like you can barely fit the straw in your mouth. It's so wide. Because, like, the ice is so thick, you can't, if you put it in a little straw, it won't go up there because you can't, that drink won't make it up.
He's got a bad hammy. He's got to hydrate.
So he's got to sit there. So he's hydrating with a slushy or a slurpee or whatever it is he'd get there. And they'll load manage, and that's what that playoff series is. So here's the real question.
You ask these questions.
Greeny's question of the day.
Nuno, I'm asking it to you. How is history going to remember Kevin Durant's titles? Now, let me give a little context before you answer. He is an historically great player for sure. I believe he's the greatest scorer ever. He lost in OKC over and over, teamed up with the best team ever to win two. Now here he is in Brooklyn with these guys. I feel like one title in OKC would have meant more than all the rest combined. So the question is, he's 6 weeks away from being a three-time NBA champion. How will history, Nuno, remember these titles?
I think if Harden doesn't play the rest of the playoffs and they win this one, I think this will be the one they actually give him credit for. I think the other two, it's going to be like you joined a 73-9 team, which was unfair. I think this one he will actually – a lot of guys will be like, oh, Kevin Durant finally got one title.
Yeah, because that's fair. This one, he came first, right? Like, he decided to come, he and Kyrie together, but he came first. And then the fact that they got Harden is what skewed all of this. Like, if they didn't have James Harden right now, it would feel totally different. So I actually just was looking at a post. I wasn't going to – this just jumped into my head to talk about it. Hold on. I was looking at a post. Who posted this? It's ESPN's Instagram account. Posted the question, who would win this series, the Warriors of 2018 or the Nets of this year? And they put up all the pictures of the guys, and the matchups would be epic. All right, so here we go. Who has the advantages? Bubba, let me ask you. I'm going to ask you these questions because many may not know this, but before his career in radio production, Bubba was an NBA scout. I mean, was extraordinarily well-regarded in that area, scouted primarily in Eastern Europe, many of the best players that have ever come to the U.S., including Tony Kukoc. So here's my question for you, Bubba. I'm just going to give you the matchup. Who has the edge? Steph Curry, Kyrie Irving?
Steph Curry.
All right, that's Warriors. Klay Thompson versus James Harden.
James Harden.
One each. Kevin Durant versus Kevin Durant. That's obviously a wash. I'm not sure if we want to say that Durant was better then before the Achilles, but it's the same person. So let's basically just say we're 1-1 and 1. Andre Iguodala versus Joe Harris.
Joe Harris.
Over Iguodala.
Yeah, well, I like Joe Harris.
Okay. I would go Iguodala.
I like Joe Harris too. Draymond Green versus Blake Griffin.
Draymond.
Yeah, for sure. So if indeed you are going to give that one to Joe Harris, which I'm not, but if you were to, and I will defer to Bubba because of his endless expertise in this field, then you would say it's a pretty even matchup. Are the Nets that dominant? Are the level of dominance that the Warriors were, I remember that was the year we launched Get Up, and I remember sitting here complaining all through the spring that the Warriors have ruined the sport. I remember having Adam on, and we were going back and forth and going at it, and he acknowledged himself, like, this was just a unique little circumstance that he became a free agent at the time that the contracts exploded, that whatever it was. It was sort of a flukish event that allowed that to happen. Is this team that good?
They might be as good as the 2018 version of the Warriors. That team lost 5 playoff games. The year before, they only lost the one. They only lost that one game in the postseason. The 2017 Warriors were better than the 2018 Warriors.
Oh. So why did they put up the 2018 Warriors?
Who knows?
I'm not even sure why they used that one as the option.
Well, the 2018 Warriors, that was a team that lost 3 games to the Rockets in the conference finals. The year before, they swept all the way through and lost only one game in totality.
That was the team that just looked like they would never lose a game, right, literally no matter what
17.
Happened. Is your dad's razor older than you are? Get him something new for Father's Day, a DSC 6-blade razor. It's perfect for an extra close, precise shave. Get one now at a store near you or as part of a gift set at dollarshaveclub.com/greeny. That's dollarshaveclub.com/greeny. And that picture with Orlovsky, I look like I'm excited about shaving for the first time. Coming up next, the most disappointing team in all of sports right now by far. Next on ESPN Radio. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. Doris Burke coming up in just a few minutes. I got a tweet here that says, Lil Mikey sure is cute. Another one that says, hey, Dad, can I drive the golf cart? All the jokes are coming in fast and furious about how short I look in this picture standing next to Dan Orlovsky. I blame my wife completely. But it also was a perfect natural segue for me to bring Buster Olney into the conversation. Robert Stanberry Olney III, my baseball insider extraordinaire on the Goodyear Hotline, helping you discover the road ahead, Goodyear more driven. Hello again, Buster Olney.
You know, I really appreciate how you deflected the height jokes right onto me. Thank you very much.
Well, I don't know if you've seen this picture, but I will send it to you if you haven't. And we took a picture at this golf outing yesterday, and I'm standing next to Orlovsky. I think we must be standing on a hill. Because, I mean, he's much taller than me, but he's not 2 feet taller than me. And that's what it looks like. It looks like he's standing on a box and I'm on my knees. One way or another, it's very upsetting. All right, Buster, I have two things I want from you today. The first of them is, we're going to get to the second one, and I want to spend a little time on that. But give me a general response to the first one. The most disappointing team in American sports right now is the New York Yankees, who your friend and mine, Mr. Hembo, was telling me before the season started was the most prohibitive favorite that he could ever remember there being in any league. And now here they are and they stink. So give me a quick synopsis, Buster, of what is wrong and what, if anything, can be done to solve it.
The offense is the worst in our lifetime, which is so contrary to the Yankees that we've seen basically, since Babe Ruth was dealt to them from the Boston Red Sox. Look, you know, every year they always rank in the top four, five, or six teams in runs scored. And this year they're 27th in runs, the lowest runs per game since 1972. It's a very right-handed team. They lead the majors hitting into double plays and making outs on the bases. And if they're going to turn this around, either, you know, guys on the team like DJ LeMahieu has been a disappointment this year. Giancarlo Stanton recently has really slumped. They got to turn it around. And Brian Cashman, the general manager, has to make deals to make the team more athletic and have more left-handed balance.
And I want to make it clear, because sometimes you compare numbers over the course of time, and all offensive numbers generally are down right now. But Hembo went through these with me earlier today. The Yankees' numbers are like the worst in the sport right now. So it's not just that they are bad as compared to the great Yankee teams or any Yankee teams of the last 100 years. They're bad in the sport today. Their run generation is the worst in the sport today. Their lineup is unimaginably imbalanced. If you take away home runs, they're averaging 2 runs per game, which is last in the American League. So it is a disaster, and we'll see if they're able to do anything about it. So there's that. Anyone watching and paying attention can see that. Here's what I really wanted to talk about.
The Scoop.
Buster, I've been following you and reading your work on this on ESPN.com and elsewhere. I'm sure a lot of baseball fans, casual fans, are following this foreign substance controversy and are not really 100% clear on what it means. But I would love you to give a relatively quick explanation of what this problem is in the sport, what's being done about it, and why everyone should care.
Okay, there is a rule that pitchers are not allowed to have foreign substances and use foreign substances when pitching. But in the last 20 years or so, what you had is this sort of a gentleman's agreement among managers and players that, you know, it's okay if you get a little sunscreen on you, a little pine tar to help get a tacky feel on your fingers. Well, in recent years, the last few years, the thought is that pitchers have weaponized this, and they have found ways to use spider tech adhesive and super glue type materials to get better spin rates on their fastballs and their breaking balls. And there is a belief that this has really contributed to the diminishment of offensive numbers that you just referenced across the sport. And this year in particular, position players behind the scenes are going crazy because they realize it's a zero-sum situation. And if pitchers are dominating, that means hitters are essentially having money taken out of their pockets. And so they have been complaining. Major League Baseball doesn't like the product. And so now, sometime in the next 2 weeks, they're going to order umpires to check pitchers for foreign substances. It's going to be a major change.
And what will happen?
Well, if in fact a memo is going to go out to teams later this week, and after that, Major League Baseball will officially order umpires to do checks of pitchers. And from what I understand, they're going to do random checks. It's going to be like DUI checkpoints, 8 to 10 a game, probably 2 for each starting pitcher. Because they're concerned about the effect on pace of play, a lot of those checks are going to happen as pitchers leave the mound at the end of a half inning or an outing, where an umpire is going to intercept them and say, show me your hands, show me your glove, show me your belt. By the way, as part of this, in the last couple of months, Major League Baseball has essentially developed scouting reports on where pitchers use foreign substances, because it's been out in the open. Like, anybody watching on television knows that this has been going on, and umpires are going to be briefed going into each series and being told Mike Greenberg, pitcher for the Chicago Cubs, likes to have a little pelican grip on the long string hanging off his glove. That's what you look for. It is going to be a very different approach by umpires.
And what will they do if they find it?
What they've been talking about, and none of this was finalized when I reported on this the other day, what they've been talking about is suspending violators 10 days without pay. Mm-hmm. The union might push back, but the feeling in baseball is that this has had such a dramatic impact on offensive numbers, on position players, that they're going to just say, you know what, we're going to throw the book at you. If you want to take it to a grievance, go ahead.
Fascinating. And so, again, I'm so glad we did this, because I've been reading these stories and I realize that even I, who live in this stuff every single day, had to really carefully go through it to make sure I was fully understanding the magnitude of it and the importance of it. And so that's why I know, Buster, you've been all over this, and that's why I wanted to make sure that we got it on here. All right. Thank you, my friend. Always appreciate it. I'll see you soon.
All right, Greeny, I'll try to grow between now and the next time I see you.
Best of luck with that. The great Buster Olney, Robert Stanberry Olney III, raised on a Vermont dairy farm, and no one is more fun to talk baseball with anywhere. Coming up next, the great Doris Burke, no one is more fun to talk basketball with. Is this series with the Nets and the Bucks already over? And the rest of the playoff picture, all that and more. Doris will join us live right after this. I'm Greeny on ESPN Radio. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you, coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. The great Doris Burke live in 30 seconds talking hoops. After this word from California Almonds, you want to be your best. Whether your best means being the best bingo player in the office or the best volleyball player on the planet. And to do that, you need some help. Your teammate to tackle anything and everything. A handful of almonds have 6 grams of plant-based protein and are an excellent source of vitamin E and magnesium. It's the snack you need to keep your head in the game and your body energized. So whether you're going for the gold or another round of bingo, refuel with almonds. California Almonds, own your every day, every day. And with that, it is my delight to bring Doris Burke into the conversation on the Goodyear Hotline. She will have games 2 and 3 of Clippers Jazz for ESPN and ABC and all other things basketball. Hello again, Doris Burke.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing? It's been too long since we've had a chance to catch up.
It has, and I'm doing badly, and I will tell you why. One of the reasons is because my wife posted a picture of me standing next to Dan Orlovsky, and just the way we're standing, I look like he's 2 feet taller than me, and I feel very bad about it. So there's that, and everyone's making fun of me. But that's not really your problem. Here's the one thing that might be, and that is I'm feeling bad that the Nets are about to ruin the playoffs. That what they did last night without James Harden, you know, I sat down with my son and my nephew, and we're all excited to watch this game, and like 15 minutes into it, I'm looking to read a book. So I'm worried, Doris, that the Nets are just going to run rampant through this thing. Can you make me feel better?
You know, I'm not sure I can because I was shocked at what happened last night. The fact that the Milwaukee Bucks could manufacture a total of 86 points against the 22nd-ranked defense in the NBA was shocking to me. And if this becomes an isolation series, you are talking about two of the best to ever do it in isolation in Kyrie and Kevin Durant. So if the Milwaukee Bucks do not find a way, Mike, to get multiple action offense, to get to the second side of the floor, to get Giannis Antetokounmpo a shot in the paint at some point in the first period of game 3 would be a very good thing. And let's give some credit to the Nets because I thought their defense was good. Steve Nash has spent the entire season talking about getting their defense to a respectable level, getting sharp enough and consistent enough with their switching that they have a legitimate shot at a title. I am like you. I sat there in abject disbelief at what happened with the Milwaukee Bucks. And listen, it's been a privilege for me to watch Kevin Durant. I've seen him walk up in finals games with the weight of the world and the weight of the game on his shoulders and him just consistently deliver. So that from that perspective, that was fun. But I am really, really shocked at what transpired last night.
Me too. And it's even worse because when we talk about great isolation players and everything else, James Harden has played 43 seconds in this series. And last night we were trying to decide what that is. He's sitting there drinking on the side. It looks like a Slurpee or a whatever those big gulps are with that huge straw. Like, they don't even need him. Like they have James freaking Harden sitting there on the bench, and they don't even need him. That is a level of dominance that I can't ever remember seeing.
They don't need him in this series. But let's be real. And I had somebody pose this question to me last week. You know, if the Brooklyn Nets win this thing, you know, is there anything for an NBA fan to celebrate? And I said, well, first of all, can we just, you know, pump the brakes on winning the championship? We're a long way from that, obviously. There's still some series to be played here and a couple more games, hopefully at least in this series. And this is something that people, I think, around the Nets would say to you is, you know, the single biggest difference maker for a long stretch of the season was James Harden. Mm-hmm. And I would think that there's some team out there that can apply enough pressure on you to make his absence be felt if he can't get back. And it's difficult, right? I know the first 2 games have looked easy for the Nets, but winning an NBA championship is difficult. There will be challenges ahead, even if the Milwaukee Bucks don't provide it. So I'm hopeful to see James because there's, and you know this, Mike, we've watched James be a virtuoso on the offensive end, absorb all the criticism. Is he fun to watch? He dominates the ball, et cetera, et cetera. Luka Doncic now facing similar criticism in some circles about how much he dominates the ball. But the fact of the matter is he has an opportunity to maybe change the narrative on what has been a brilliant individual career. So I hope he gets a chance to get back and participate.
Me too. And I'd love to see them in a real competition. Greeny and the great Doris Burke, who's with me on TV this morning, both Jalen Rose and Jay Williams with me were critical of Giannis and his lack of aggressiveness and some of his limitations, which are quite simply he's an unbelievable player. But he is not a good shooter. And in the NBA today, that is more important than it's ever been. So as you watch him right now, what can he do to get Milwaukee back in this series?
Yeah, I thought I saw a level of passivity that was surprising, especially in light of the playoff failures from a year ago. And they came in as an organization top down, understanding that this season was really a referendum that would be, you know, they would be subjected to at this exact moment in time. So you spend an entire season being uncomfortable, doing things defensively you haven't done yet, and you don't look ready for the moment. Those are facts. They have not looked ready. And I think they were guilty last night of something you see sometimes consistently in the playoffs, particularly for a team that's operating at the point in history in which the Bucks are. Having dominated regular seasons, Giannis winning multiple MVPs, they tried to do it individually. They played a lot of one-on-one basketball, and I go back to my original point. If this is an ISO game, fellas, you are in trouble. Mm-hmm. You've got, and Giannis has to be more assertive and aggressive. They've got to be able to play off their defense, get some stops, get out in transition, have Giannis, you know, at the cup quickly and putting all the pressure he can on. But, yes, and let's be real, This is interesting to me because anytime, Mike, you go to the Bucks practice facility, which we've not been able to do, but anytime you watch Giannis practice and shoot threes before, he is excellent. He can do it. Yes, it's a shot that takes time to manufacture because it just the way his shooting motion is, it takes time. He can do it. It's a mental battle for him, right? And when defenses are consistently giving you a cushion and just saying, go ahead. Prove it. Like you're having those doubts in your mind. And even though you've put in the work and you know from a physical standpoint you can do it, they're challenging you to prove it. It's not the first time. It won't be the last time. And until he does it, well, you better get used to it because the floor will be shrunk. You will be facing multiple bodies when you come near the paint, as Bruce Brown did consistently last night. Those guards are going to be digging down and forcing you to kick it to open shooters. And oh, by the way, Chris Middleton had better start to make some shots on those kickouts because it's the only thing that's going to allow Giannis to get his opportunities. So there's a lot of blame to be around, but the flaws in Giannis's game, yes, they're exposing them. Prove it to me.
You're giving me some hope. This conversation with Doris Burke is giving me some hope. I had given up hope, and now you're giving me some hope. So we'll see if it goes that way with the Nets in the East. As I mentioned, Doris will have games 2 and 3 of Clippers Jazz for ESPN and ABC in the West, which feels as wide open as I can ever remember anything. It's a conference that Golden State dominated for a while, and then LeBron last year, and now here we go with all of these teams with very little history and a whole lot of talent. As you sort of sit back and look at the four teams in the West big picture right now, who do you like? Who do you think, if everyone plays their best, who's the best team?
Well, if you don't mind, could I take it in another direction?
Sure, of course.
Because I think it's so on point for the modern era of the NBA. So we have talked a lot, Mike, about the three-point revolution and how much value there is placed on that shot. Mm-hmm. And for old schoolers, it's frustrating. You know, for Pop in San Antonio, it's counterintuitive to build your offense from the outside in. The Jazz are setting an NBA record, taking 49% of their shots from three-point territory. They have leaned all the way into the three-point revolution. So if, in fact, they advance to an NBA Finals or even perhaps a conference final and it becomes they're on the brink of the Finals, what does that do to the philosophical vantage points of all these franchises, do we have even more leaning in to the three-point shot? Here's what I believe, though. The Los Angeles Clippers have the exact physical makeup that could present the team that had the best record in basketball this season, the Utah Jazz. Let's be honest. They had the best record. They were the best team. They have the makeup that gives Utah problems. They are switchable across positions because you have to play Rudy Gobert. You don't have to consistently downsize. And the absence of Mike Conley means Paul George can guard Donovan. Kawhi Leonard can be on Bojan Bogdanovic. You need guys who can get off the dribble, who can touch the paint and can spray it out to the shooters. So if Mike Conley doesn't play, I like the Clippers to advance. And boy, what momentum they would have going into a Western Conference final. And listen, it's about shot making for Utah. Can they make enough threes? It's been about that the whole way. So that particular matchup fascinates me.
Me too. And that's such excellent analysis of it. And, you know, I'm sure that as you sit here and are going over all of it, you go back to that game six that Kawhi has the other night. And, yeah. And that really is the stuff of legend, right? I mean, it tends to happen in game six. It's Clay's game six, LeBron's game six. Now Kawhi has that. He's a two-time champion and has been the MVP of the finals twice. But that to me was one of the best performances I've ever seen from him.
Yeah, and he's been able to function in the way that he is perfectly comfortable, correct? All season long, because perhaps, they just managed to stay just enough under the radar to make Kawhi settle in. And he is a brilliant two-way basketball player. And he'll be prepared. And I guess the one thing I would say is, okay, he had to expend a lot of energy. So if you're the Jazz, you've been off since last Wednesday. Is that ready or is it rust? And then Kawhi Leonard, think about what he had to do in that first round just to dig them out of there. What's his energy level? I would assume he's 100% fine. I just think the Clippers are going to make the Jazz a one-on-one basketball team because of their switchability. And if I were the West, I might be a little bit concerned about what the Clippers could build in this next series and the momentum they could possibly have if they were to advance to a West final.
It's a good point you make in that, like a year ago, they were the team everyone was expecting. And now here they are a little bit under the radar, comparatively speaking. Let's see if they do it. One more thing, Doris, I so appreciate the time. You said something about Luka that I'm interested in. I love him. And I love watching him play. I love his spirit. He's 22 years old, and he accounted for 77 points in a game seven on the road on Sunday. Right. So that's about as good as it gets. What is the criticism you hear? And because it's not something I knew much about and I hadn't heard much of. And what is your sense of him right now at this stage of his career and what you think he might become?
I believe this article is on the Ringer, Mike, and I will go back through my notes and search it, but I believe it was a piece in the immediate aftermath of their loss. And it was essentially talking about how ball dominant Luka is. And I love watching him play. I mean, he's an MVP candidate every year, and think about how young he is. But you heard sort of Kristaps Porzingis, and he did this consistently throughout the season, sort of complain about his touches. And, you know, the expectation was he would be the number two. Now, I think he has to accept responsibility for his level of play. But this, I believe it was the Ringer article, it just talked about, yes, he's brilliant. And yes, he can carry a team to the brink of a win in big moments. But essentially the question was, does he have the ball too much? And you've heard this a little bit from Kendrick Perkins, too, our great analyst for ESPN, who's not ever afraid to share an opinion. He said, I think this is on Rick Carlisle. And you know, there were objections from Zach Lowe and Richard Jefferson. No, it's more. So the debate has begun. Who is this on the shoulders of? Does Luka have the ball too much? Is this on Rick Carlisle? Is it on Luka? Do they have to get other people involved? I think he's brilliant, but one man is never enough to win an NBA championship, or very rarely, perhaps, is one man enough to win an NBA championship. So it is really sort of in the formative stages, and I think he's a brilliant basketball player. I think if you're the Mavs, you're examining every single thing about what's going on right now.
Again, Doris Burke will have games 2 and 3 of Clippers Jazz for us on ESPN and ABC. It is always a pleasure to catch up. Thank you so much, Doris. We'll be watching.
Great to visit with you, Mike. Be well.
You take care. All right. And here, I found the story while she was talking. I just Googled it quickly. It's easy to find. It is a Ringer story. Jonathan, is it Jarks? T-J-A-R-K-S. I wrote it. I apologize. Charks? Thank you. I apologize that I don't know how to pronounce it. But one way or the other, I found the story. The headline is, Luka is in a league of his own for better or worse. And it talks about how well he played and all the things he did. But I'm going to read you. I found the part of it that I thought was most important. Hold on a second. Let me get to this. Stand by. He writes, what Doncic did to the Clippers was the closest thing to a one-man offense you will ever see in the playoffs. He had the most total points either scored or assisted in a game seven, as well as the highest percentage of his team's baskets in any playoff game in game number five. But there are downsides to being a one-man offense. Basketball is a zero-sum game. There are only so many points, rebounds, and assists to go around. The more Luka gets, the fewer there are for anyone else. He's so good that he inevitably turns the players around him into bystanders. That was always LeBron's issue, too. It never made sense for him to give up control of the offense even for a moment. There have been rumblings all season in Dallas about the strained relationship between Luka and Kristaps Porzingis. Mark Cuban even acknowledged them in an interview. Playing in such a Luka-centric offense can be difficult for a former All-Star like Porzingis. The initial idea when the Mavs traded for him was that he would be the 1B to Luka's 1A. But Porzingis' average time of possession was a sixth of Luka's during the regular season. He became more like a fourth or fifth option because Luka was options 1, 2, and 3. I'm not going to read you the entire thing, but that's the basic idea of it. So I guess the question is that fair? Sitting where I sit, and I will admit, I do not watch every game the Mavericks play all season long, obviously. I watch the highlights, I look at the numbers, and during the play, I probably, of that seven-game series, I think I saw five of the games. That looked to me like a team that either Luka was going to do it or it wasn't going to get done. That's what I think. Like, I remember the early Michael Jordan Bulls teams when Jordan scored 63 points in a loss to the Celtics. Like, they were just outmanned. They were outmatched. There's literally nothing he could do that they were going to win, and he was going to do absolutely everything he could. And that's what it looks like to me. Now, we did poke a little fun at Porzingis earlier in this show, which I take back not a word of, based upon what we are seeing. But I think what the suggestion of this piece is that Luka is part of that issue. That Luka, maybe the next, let's put it this way, maybe it is fair to say the next level of the development of his game is going to be to figure out how to make Porzingis great. Because Luka is great, and he can put up numbers the likes of which we've practically never seen. But it is very reasonable to say if he's going to win anything of consequence, he's going to need at least one more great player with him, and maybe it's his job to make Porzingis that player. Is that a fair thing to say?
I think that's fair, although it does remind me some, like the piece suggested, of early LeBron. Like, Luka's probably way better than even they thought. So when they brought in Kristaps Porzingis, like they mentioned in the piece, 1A and 1B, maybe Luka doesn't need a 1B, though. Like, maybe what you need is a bunch of 3 and D guys. Maybe you need to build a team the way that the Sixers used to build a team around Allen Iverson, a bunch of guys that can play defense and make shots. Maybe Kristaps Porzingis, even so long as Luka continues to improve and make his teammates better, isn't even the right fit. He's so good, I think, that he's already grown out of that role.
Perhaps. Now, the problem is you owe Kristaps Porzingis $150 million over the next few years, so you don't really have that option. Nuno, real quick, what do you think? My VP of Basketball Insight. Nuno, what do you think? Is any criticism of Luka Doncic coming out of that series, in your opinion, fair?
No, the only criticism I have of Luka is he complains way too much. He needs, and he's admitted
right.
that.
That's separate.
But no, I think at this point in time, he is, maybe Hembo is right that he's too good to have this belief that he needs someone on his level next to him.
But here's the problem. In the same show today, we just said that, and earlier we said no one player is good enough to win a championship anymore. So if the objective is to win a championship, he needs to find another great player to play with, and he needs to learn how to play with him.
Not necessarily. The Raptors won a championship a few years ago with Kawhi Leonard being the 1A, and then everyone else being sort of good complementary pieces around him. He might be more that kind of player than he would be someone who you want to compile other, you know, high-volume scorers or touchers around him. I think that's a reasonable thing to say.
Okay.
I looked at the numbers here, Greeny. NBA advanced stats does a time of possession stat, just the amount of seconds that the ball was in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
In the playoffs this year, Luka, more than 12 minutes per game. In the playoffs this year, Porzingis, less than 1 minute per game. It was that kind of difference.
So 12 to 1.
12 to
is
1.
Is 12 the most of any player? Do
By
you have
far.
That? Who's second?
Trae Young is up there. Russell Westbrook is up there. But 12 minutes for Luka blows everyone else away.
All right. This is an interesting one. I'm glad Doris brought that up. We can get into it more tomorrow. If you missed anything today, a reminder that we stream on ESPN Plus. You can watch anytime you want. You can also listen to the podcast. Both hours posted daily as a podcast. They're available wherever you want. And once again, I'm distressed by how short I look in the photo next to Dan Orlovsky. So I'm going to go find him. I'm going to stand on a large box. I'm going to take another picture, and I'm going to post it later. Have a wonderful day, and we'll be back in Better Than Ever tomorrow on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can check out Greeny live weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN Plus. Also, don't miss Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 Eastern on ESPN. This is Greeny, the podcast.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.